Greetings and welcome to this week's edition of the Mr. Science Show, the podcast where science meets pop culture. And this week, we're looking at the domestication of the dog. Recently, a massive worldwide study was conducted on the dog genome with the aim of trying to understand dog diversification better. You can probably tell just by looking at the dogs in your local neighbourhood that there are a wide variety of dogs and that the genetic diversity amongst our canine friends is huge. Australia's contribution to this study was from Dr. Alan Wilton of the University of New South Wales School of Biotechnology and Biomolecular Sciences. Dr. Wilton is one of Australia's, and indeed the world's, leading experts on the dingo, and it was UNSW's role to contribute dingo DNA. Dr. Wilton was awarded the Unsung Hero of Science Award in 2004 from the Australian Science Communicators for his dingo research, and he's also recently been awarded an Excellence in Contribution to Canine Research Award from the Master Dog Breeders Association. By observing almost 50,000 sites on the dog genome, across 85 different breeds, this study was able to draw some pretty strong conclusions about when dog domestication first took place and about when dingoes entered Australia. I recently had a chat to Dr. Wilton, and I started by asking him a little bit about the background for this study.
Basically, it's an international collaboration to look at the domestication of dogs and try and identify where dogs originated and when they originated. We included in that group a number of dingo samples that we had tested here in Australia. And what all of the researchers had been using in common was this molecular biology tool that allows you to look at 50,000 different regions of the dog all in one experiment, and to compare all of those 50,000 little bits of DNA sequence information. And then, you know, sort of try and make a story out of it, you know, who's most closely related to who and which ones are the most different. The interesting bit of information from our point of view is the dingo turned out to be the most different of all of the domestic-type dogs. And the other major bit of the story is where did dogs originate, and did they originate just once or several times from when, and they were obviously domesticated from wolves, but this data also confirms that, gives us an idea of when and where.
So the dingo is quite a special breed. Does the study suggest a timeline for when the dingoes might have arrived in Australia?
Yeah, our previous research work that I've done in collaboration with other people has suggested that the dingoes came to Australia about 5,000 years ago, and that probably only quite a small group of individuals. If you look at the genetic variation amongst the dingoes, there's not much. It suggests that not many animals brought into Australia when they came. And that fits with the archaeological evidence. So the earliest archaeological evidence for dingoes is about, you know, sort of 4,000 years ago. At around that time, people were sailing the northern Australia to trade with Aborigines and collect sea cucumbers and things like that. A large number of different animals had been brought in, particularly from different places. We'd expect to see a lot of genetic variation, a lot of differences in the DNA between dingoes, but we find very little differences. And one of the bits of DNA that we look at is the mitochondrial DNA, and that's inherited only from the mother. And and so the study we did with some Swedish colleagues who were also interested in domestication of the dog, it showed that there's really only one mitochondrial DNA type in all of the dingoes that we've tested in Australia, and that that suggests that very few individuals, you know, perhaps even only one female, was brought across to Australia. Or at least all of the animals that were brought across probably came from the same village and were related.
And there were 85 different breeds of dog that were looked at in this study. What are some of the other ancient breeds of dog that are still around?
a number of the different Chinese breeds seem to be, and Asian breeds seem to be a little different to the standard European breeds. So things like Akitas and Chows are considered ancient breeds, and they're Asian breeds. And then the Basenji, which is also another dog that doesn't bark, like the dingo, it's an African dog originally, and it's also shown to be quite an ancient breed of dog.
And this study suggests that domestication first took place in the Middle East as opposed to East Asia, which was the previously held belief. I understand there's been a bit of controversy about this. So.
Yes, it is a controversial finding. It's very difficult to take data from evidence of animals alive today and work out what happened 15, 20,000 years ago. And so you have to make certain assumptions. And this data seemed to find that if you compare the DNA from wolves that are from the Middle Eastern area, that they share more similarity to domestic dogs than wolves from other areas. And so that's what the basis of the claim in this paper is, where there is other people that previously looked at genetic variation around between dogs around the world, and they found the most variation in areas of China, and they interpreted that as saying that that's where the dogs had originated, because there was lots of genetic variation there. So they both make certain, based on certain assumptions which we don't know are true. And the other issue is we don't know really, you know, were there several different domestication events? Have some of these animals that we call the ancient breeds, like the dingo and the chow and Akita and Basenji, were they a different domestication event to the European domestic dogs?
So I imagine it's quite hard just to draw a simple family tree of dogs.
Yeah, well, they've attempted in this paper, and they have some very nice coloured pictures of the family tree of dogs and how they are related. And it's obvious that, you know, sort of the wolves stand out from all the different breeds, and we can see how all the different breeds are related to each other. But the question of where the domestication event occurred is a little bit more difficult than just plotting the relationship between animals.
How long ago did domestication occur? When I first looked at the title, I thought that perhaps the domestication event might have been in Africa when humans moved out of there. Can we put a date on the domestication event in the Middle East?
These sorts of things have a big standard error on them, you know, so it's a bit of a guesstimate. But it's around 15,000 years ago, 15 to 20,000 years ago, and there is archaeological evidence, which is also difficult to interpret. You're trying to tell the difference between bones from a dog and bones from a wolf can be quite difficult, but the archaeologists think they can do that. And there are various dates of bones from dogs, some even back as far as 40,000 years ago. So this is the sort of the period of, you know, 20,000 years ago when people were starting to settle down and live in farming communities and things like that.
And just a question about your dingo research. I noticed that in 2004 you were awarded the Unsung Hero of Science Award by the Australian Communicators for your dingo research. Where is your research into dingoes taking you right now?
One of the main areas of research that we're doing is looking at the problem of hybridisation between domestic dogs and the dingoes, because the dingo is a distinct, very different breed of dog, but it was once a domesticated dog, and it's probably what all domesticated dogs were like about 5,000 years ago, before all of these modern breeds were created. And if we want to conserve the native dingo as it was originally, we have to be able to differentiate between pure dingoes and hybrids. And so we're using sort of DNA fingerprinting methods, the same sort of thing that you see on all of these forensic CSI programs on the television for identifying, you know, missing people and things like that, to try and distinguish between hybrids and pure animals and try and find out if there are any populations left that are pure dingoes, or if, you know, indeed the dingo is doomed to extinction and replacement in Australia by the domestic dog.
Oh, that's really interesting. So we might have already passed a point of no return with the dingo.
Well, there are many conservation groups that have dingoes in captivity that they're breeding in the hope that one day they'll be able to be released into the wild in a protected area. And we do have naturally protected areas like Fraser Island that, it's a national park and people can't take their dogs and it's separated by water. So you can't have dingoes just wandering in off the street. And so that would seem to be a pure population. And the hope is that we'll find some isolated populations in the centre of Australia that still haven't had contact with domestic dogs. But part of the problem is the way we treat the dingoes is the dingoes have a social structure where any foreign dog that came into their area would usually be killed as an intruder. But if we shoot and poison the animals and break up their social structure so you have solitary animals wandering around desperate for a mate, they'll probably breed with any old poodle that they come across. And therefore we're encouraging hybridization by destroying their social structure.
It's an interesting idea that the dingoes were once domesticated and then became undomesticated. So the dingo precursor was a domesticated dog and then they came to Australia where they became undomesticated.
Well, the Aboriginal people used dingoes as pets in their camps and used them as hunting dogs. As well, so and there were a lot of wild animals as well, so they weren't only a wild animal in Australia, though the dingoes tend to be a lot smarter and quicker than the most domestic dogs, and so the story is you can train a dingo to do what you want it to do whenever it feels like it. So it's more like trying to train a cat than a dog. So, unfortunately, even in Aboriginal communities, the dingo's been replaced with the much more compliant European domestic dog. So, even in outback areas, there's a lot of domestic dogs around. And unfortunately, if it goes on the way it's been, the dingo will go the way of the thylacine, and the dingo probably replaced the thylacine when they came into Australia about 4,000 years ago. And now the dingo are replaced by the European domestic dog.
I was just about to ask about the thylacine. So the thylacine was on the mainland 4,000 years ago.
Yeah, so the thylacine and the Tassie devil both would have been on the mainland at about that time. And sort of one of the probably major factors in the extinction of the thylacine from the mainland was the presence of dingoes, which probably outcompeted them. But they remained in Tasmania because the dingoes never made it to Tasmania.
So the thylacine, it's more closely related to the Tasmanian devil than it is to dogs and wolves?
Yes, it is. The thylacine is a marsupial. And so if you look at a genetic tree, the marsupial separated from the eutherian mammals something like 150 million years ago.
So well beyond the scope of this study.
Yes, that's right. Well, long way away.
There's often talk about trying to clone a thylacine and bring it back, and that might be difficult, I guess, but I guess we could do this with the dingo. What do you think?
Well, the dingoes are much more closely related to domestic dogs, but some people have even proposed sort of freezing down embryos or eggs and sperm and things like that. So in the future we could bring back the dingo, but hopefully we can at least keep on breeding it, even if only in captivity, so that we don't have to go that far. It's much more difficult with the thylacine because the closest relative we have is the Tasmanian devil, and trying to put all that DNA together and put it back into a live egg, or a live embryo with chunks of inanimate pieces of DNA is not an easy thing to do. So you want to start with something that's a living cell, like an egg and a sperm, to make the job a lot easier.
And do you have any comments about where we should be headed with trying to preserve the dingo?
I guess the comment I have is something needs to be done to try and preserve the dingo in the wild, and the only way we can do that is by separating the pure dingoes from the feral population of domestic dogs. People have let their dogs go and things like that, and so
I guess a study like this shows how unique the dingo is.
Yeah, so hopefully that's one of the things that will come away from this study. It will show the politicians and decision makers that the dingo is quite distinct from modern domestic dogs, the most different of all the breeds of dogs, and from that basis it should be an effort to preserve it. And from that point of view, if you replace the dingo in the wild with domestic dogs, the domestic dogs may not have the same behavior and the same effect on the ecosystem. And so if you remove dingoes from an area, foxes and cats will come in and they'll decimate the other native wildlife in the region that have sort of stabilized to the presence of the dingo. If you replace the dingo with the domestic dog, we don't know whether that will have the similar effect or not, whether other native species in the area will end up going extinct because of different hunting behaviours of the domestic dog to the dingo.
Well, that's about all we have time for in this week's edition of the Mr. Science Show, the podcast where science meets pop culture, and this week meets dogs. My name is Mark West. Our website, www.mrscienceshow.com. So if you have any questions or comments about this week's show or about any other week's show, get over to the website, www.mrscienceshow.com. From there, you can email me or you can catch up with me on Twitter. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll catch you next time on the podcast where science meets pop culture. Woof.